It's about 3 o'clock. This is KTOO FM. I'm Lori Scandling. Juno Afternoon is next. We'll learn about this weekend's Celebrate Equality events. Jenny Smith from the Peregrine Boosters Club will be here with details about this Friday's Whale Watch Cruise. We'll learn about art classes offered at the Canvas in August. John Marston will be here to talk about his unique photography. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more, that's next on KTOO FM.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Thunderstorms overnight displaced some 300 residents on the Rosebud Reservation. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Kathleen Saree reports.
Residents of the Rosebud Reservation in southern South Dakota are back in their homes after strong storms and flooding caused them to leave. Melissa Smith is a hydrologist and meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Rapid City. She says the storms brought tennis ball-sized hail that was reported just southeast of St. Francis and 71-mile-per-hour wind gusts around Parmalee.
There was also some flash flooding with some high water flows reported in the Little White River, as well as Rosebud Creek and along Soldier Creek down in Todd County, South Dakota.
Smith says these storms have moved to the east and drier conditions are expected for today. She says the chance for thunderstorms will return again later this evening. For National Native News, I'm Kathleen Saree.
An ongoing dispute over a casino in eastern Oklahoma has two tribes at odds. KGOU's Kurt Gortney has the details.
The Cherokee Nation has filed a request for a federal injunction to prevent the U.S. Department of the Interior from placing land of a rival tribe into trust. That move would mean the property would then be recognized as Indian land. The tribe filed a petition in Muskogee Federal Court claiming the smaller United Kituwa Band of Cherokee Indians is operating an illegal casino on about 2 acres in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. That's the capital of the Cherokee Nation. The Kituwas trace their history to Cherokees who settled in Indian territory in the 1820s and have fought for decades over the Kituwa Cherokee Casino. The smaller tribe has until the end of the month to either stop gaming or have the land placed into trust. The Bureau of Indian Affairs recently said it would proceed with the Kituwas trust application. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney.
Classes are underway at the University of Washington summer B term. As Toby Scott reports, summer classes often have light enrollment, but that's not the case with the popular one being offered by the American Indian Studies Department.
The course, titled The Twilight Series, Native Image and Myth, focuses on the popular series of vampire romance films, Twilight. The Quileute people figure prominently in those movies in which the Pacific Northwest tribe is reimagined as a race of shape-shifting werewolves. Alyssa Washuda is the class instructor and says the course will explore a variety of controversial cinematic themes present in the films, including the portrayal of what she refers to as the noble savage.
The most prominent character we see is Jacob Black, and he's portrayed as this savage animal. All of the boys in the wolf pack can just barely contain their emotion, their anger.
Calm down now.
This is not the first university-level course offered on Twilight. Harvard and the University of Iowa have both offered cinema classes centered on the popular film and book franchise. The University of Washington's course, however, is being offered by the American Indian Studies Program. Students in the 5-credit class will be asked to write papers, discuss themes from the films, and watch all 4 Twilight movies. For National Native News, I'm Toby Scott.
The White Mountain Apache Tribe, the state of Arizona, and the U.S. Department of the Interior signed a water rights settlement Tuesday. State, tribal, and federal officials participated in the signing ceremony in Washington, D.C. According to the Interior Department, the agreement quantifies rights of the tribe, provides drinking water to the reservation community, and helps secure water supplies for the city of Phoenix. The White Mountain Apache Reservation includes more than 1 million acres in the headwaters of the Salt River Basin in Arizona. The agreement resolves the tribe's claim to the Gila and Little Colorado rivers in the state. It also includes funding for infrastructure for water projects. During this week in 2010, President Obama signed the Tribal Law and Order Act into law. The legislation addresses crime in tribal communities. Among many things, it encourages the hiring of more law enforcement officers for tribal lands, provides tools for police, and supports the development of alcohol and drug prevention programs for youth. Tribes, national Native organizations, and federal agencies continue to coordinate to implement the law. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome. I'm Lori Scandling. This is Juno Afternoon. On the board today is our engineer, Jeff Brown. Our first guest in our first segment this afternoon will be talking about a couple of events happening this weekend called Equality for All Alaskans. And our guests are Mo Longworth of Juneau, Kimberly Crawford, also of Juneau. And on the phone, we have Josh Decker, who is the interim director of the Alaska ACLU, and he's in Anchorage with us. Welcome to the program. Glad to have you here today.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Why don't you tell us first, let's get the basics out. What, when, where, and let's talk about the why as well.
Sure. There's really two what's and where's. It begins on Friday night at the Jack at 7 p.m. with a night of entertainment and dancing. There's food and drink, and DJ Manu has volunteered to play music, and lots of different entertainers will be singing, Kathleen and Dan Wayne, the Juno Pride Chorus, and Kat Lee, and also Wendy Burns, and Vanessa Lavoce will be doing a drag show number. And we will basically have a night of both entertainment and a little bit of education, because Joshua Decker from ACLU will be there to talk about what we're celebrating. Then, and there's also going to be it's a benefit performance, and all of these volunteers have volunteered so that we can turn around, and any donations we get, give to the ACLU Alaska Foundation. They're all tax deductible. So it's a good place to come and spend money, and we have a lot of silent auction items donated by lots of great, generous people in Juneau. And so we're hoping it'll be just a really fun, celebratory evening. We're having a bar partially donated by Rendezvous. We're even going to have a special drink called Equala Tea with a tea-flavored alcohol and fruits in it and things like that. And then we're going to have mocktails for people who don't drink alcohol, also special drinks just for this event. And then on Saturday, we're having, and that's, just to go back to that, that's at 7 o'clock at the Jack, Friday night, right after Concert in the Park, Food Truck Friday.
Okay, and I see that it's for all ages.
It's for all ages, and the performers are going to be of all ages as well.
Okay.
One of the Native dance groups that's performing has 9-year-olds to 70-year-olds in the group. And then on Saturday, we're doing a more in-depth seminar, and that's at 1 o'clock with not only Joshua Decker, the ACLU attorney, but Allison Mendel, a LGBT specialist in family law in Anchorage, and Marge Kaiser, a CPA in Anchorage, because there's many new things that are coming down the pike, even here in Alaska, for lesbian and gay couples who've been legally married in other states. And that information, it's a seminar and question and answer opportunity, is going to be at the Holy Trinity Episcopal Church Hall called McFeeters, everybody knows McFeeters, on Gold and Fourth in downtown Juneau. And everyone's welcome to come to that as well. And the panelists will basically bring us up to speed on what the changes are and what we can expect, how we're affected by it here in Alaska.
So in looking at the posters promoting each of these events, one Friday night at 7 and one Saturday at 1. I don't see a cost. Is it free?
They're both free.
That's fantastic. So people can come and participate. But the funds raised via the auction will be donated to the ACLU Alaska Foundation.
Correct. And okay. We also are encouraging people to give donations if they don't purchase a silent auction item.
Great. Well, let's transition to Josh and find out a little bit more about the purpose. I see at the top of one of the posters it says, wondering just what the recent Supreme Court decisions mean for Alaska. So perhaps that's the entree to get Josh online and get some background about the intent of the event. Josh, what more can you tell us?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. That's a perfect entree. The Supreme Court decision that you mentioned and that our posters refer to talk about an ACLU case, ACLU case that we brought and just won last month before the U.S. Supreme Court. It was United States versus Edie Windsor, and this was an ACLU case. Edie is a client of ours, and the Supreme Court held that it violates the federal constitution for the U.S. government to decide that same-sex couples who are married to treat them as not married under federal law. And this obviously has a large impact for Alaskans, and so one of the things that we're going to talk about is not only the history of this ACLU case, of the Edie Windsor case, but also what the Supreme Court's decision means for Alaskans today, for folks who perhaps were married outside the state and live here in Alaska, or also for individuals who live in Alaska but have not gotten married because our state does not recognize marriage equality. And then the third thing that we're going to touch on is sort of a preview of what the next steps are to advance the goal of marriage equality. The ACLU filed a lawsuit to challenge three states' anti-equal marriage amendments in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Virginia. So we'll talk about those cases as well as what people can expect and what people can do here in Alaska to increase the cause of justice and equality for everyone.
Josh, in Alaska, you talked about efforts in three other states to, I thought you said, change amendments. I'm not sure I understood that correctly, but of course in Alaska, via a public vote, there was an amendment to our Constitution that defines marriages between one man and one woman. What options do Alaskans have?
Well, you're exactly right. Alaska has the infamy of being the first state in the Union to enshrine in a state constitution the definition of marriage being just between one man and one woman. What these cases that the ACLU is bringing in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Virginia are challenging those states, similar amendments that also define marriage as just between one man and one woman. In Alaska, what individuals can do is, first of all, they should feel free to reach out to us if they have particular questions because, of course, legal advice always depends on the facts on the ground. We have an information sheet on our website that people can visit, and the website address is akclu.org, short for Alaska Civil Liberties Union.org, akclu.org. And if folks visit that, they can see a two-page printout that talks about what the Edie Windsor decision means for them. But if folks are really interested, I'd encourage them to come down on Friday and especially on Saturday to really get into the fine grain details, not only with me, but also with Allison Mendel and Marjorie Kaiser, both of whom are world-renowned experts on this. Allison is by far a national expert on these issues, and she really is the exemplar of Alaska knowledge. And so if folks are interested in terms of how does this concretely affect me and what specifically can we do going forward, Saturday is going to be a good opportunity to have that discussion.
Any of the three of you can answer the following query, and that is there's been a sea change that obviously has gained tremendous momentum just in the last year in terms of public attitudes changing about same-sex unions, same-sex relationships. Do we see any possibility of that changing attitude perhaps being reflected in Alaska in terms of another initiative that might change the Constitution back? Is that under discussion? Is it being envisioned?
You know, one reason I'm on this group of planning this event is that my partner and I, Lynn Davis, have been working on gay rights since the 70s. I mean, when I was still living with my boyfriend, I was marching at the same marches in San Francisco that Lynn was marching at because I just believe in equal rights. You know, I grew up with it, with my parents marching for rights for African Americans, and went right into marching for gay rights after that. And, you know, it's been incremental change all the way along. And I know just from my experience being in Juneau for 20 years, when I first moved here, it was just unheard of to even go to your employer and ask for equal benefits. And I moved here to work for the search clinic, and every year was told, year after year, went to ask the board to review it again, and would they give us both health benefits? And every year I was told no. And it took, you know, suing the state of Alaska and winning that case that Lynn and I and 12 other couples represented by ACLU Alaska won and got health benefits for all state workers in Alaska. And before that, I probably would have been much more discouraged about the answer to your question, Lori, but you know, at this point, I really do envision being able to be equal, completely equal in our state. And I'm not sure how long it's going to take. Like I said to Joshua, I hope it's not like Edie Windsor, and after one of us has already passed on, me or Lynn, that our estate is being taken to court, you know. And I look at Kimberly here next to me, and I'd really like to hear Kimberly's answer to this question, because Kimberly's probably the age I was when I first started being a gay rights activist. What do you have to say, Kimberly?
I'm also interested, Kimberly, how this is not a group. You're an ad hoc bunch of folks who wanted to bring this together. So maybe you could answer both questions.
I think definitely. I think we're coming into a new age where people do realize that equal rights are just that. They're equal rights, and that everyone deserves them. And so I think the answer to that is it's coming soon. It's coming very soon. And I think that everybody that I talk to as of late, I don't hear any prejudice. So I just honestly, I don't even know where it's coming from.
So have this group coalesce and decide we need to celebrate and also have deeper information available for folks.
We all sort of just got together because we believe it's important to let everybody know what's going on. If you're not directly affected with this Supreme Court decision, you wouldn't necessarily know exactly what's going on or anything like that. And that's why we all decided to get together and to make this community event so that everyone could know that, yes, things are changing, but we still don't quite have the rights that we deserve yet, the full rights. So.
And something Kimberly and I share is we're both married women, but we're both illegally married. You know, we don't have marriage rights here in our state, and we've both gone to the trouble and expense of holding big weddings that didn't gain any legal power. And I think that this is basically a giant wedding party on Friday night. We are going to celebrate that people all over our nation now are able to get married. And even Alaskans can go down and get married in another state. And some of the things that they're going to talk about, Joshua and Allison and Marge, on Saturday in more detail, is how even us here in Alaska are affected by these changes if we do go to the trouble of going out of state or out of the country and getting a legal marriage. For instance, if you're in Alaska and you're in the military and you've been married legally in another state, you're married, even in Alaska, when you're in the eyes of the military, under military orders, and on the base. But the example of how these new regulations are so difficult to enforce is that as soon as that person leaves the base, they're no longer married in Alaska. And so what happens when that person goes to the emergency room? You know, what happens when they're out fishing? You know, it's just crazy. And there's no way they're going to be able to enforce it without it changing. So, yes, we are here for the change, and we're going to be dancing about it on Friday night.
Well, that's an apt description. So to summarize, we have two events coming up this weekend to celebrate equality for all Alaskans. Friday night, 7 to 9:30, a free all-ages event at the Jack. Centered on entertainment, it will include a silent auction. There will be alcohol and non-alcoholic drinks available and lots of dancing, it sounds like.
And we need to thank our sponsors because we had some donations that are significant.
Okay. Kimberly, you want to do that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I just want to say that Sigla has helped us out a tremendous amount. PFLAG is our fiscal sponsor, and Pride Foundation has given us money as well. And they've been tremendous in the support to make this happen.
Great. So that's Friday night at 7 over at the Jack, and then the following day at 1 o'clock at McPeters Hall, a Q&A session to learn more deeply about what the Supreme Court decision may mean for Alaskans. And again, that's 1 o'clock at McPeters Hall. All proceeds from both events will benefit the ACLU Foundation for Alaska. Josh, thanks for joining us from Anchorage. We look forward to having you here.
And they're free.
And
thank you.
Yes, Mo wants to emphasize they are free, so you don't need money to go and enjoy yourself or to get additional information on this important topic. Thanks to Kimberly and Mo and Josh
for
being here, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling. Our next guest is Jenny Smith, and she's from the Peregrine Boosters Club, which is associated with the Thunder Mountain Falcons. And she has some information about the, as I recall, being a sports parent, the ongoing, unceasing, unremitting, continual fundraising to support a very expensive sport.
Absolutely.
And, of course, getting in and out of our remote community always costs a few bucks. So tell us about how you're going to do that, Jenny.
Well, actually, we have a wonderful fundraiser coming up this Friday, Friday evening whale watching tour with Alan Marine. Boards at 5 p.m. at Auk Bay's Statter Harbor. That's the marina just down below DeHart's store. And it's a 3-hour cruise. We'll be departing at 5:30 and returning at 8:30.
Okay. All proceeds or part of the proceeds go to the Peregrine Booster Club?
All proceeds go to the Peregrine Booster Club, and what we do is we turn it over to the high school to fund the kids' travel, uniforms, equipment, whatever we need to have a football program here.
And folks should know that, of course, the school district puts in funds, but it's never enough, and the community has been incredibly generous over the years and has provided some very, very essential funding, because only a certain number of kids and a certain number of adults can travel with the public funds, and the roster can't be fully supported without the fundraising.
That's right, and we've had deep cuts this year, and actually we don't have public funds for our travel this year. We are all self-supporting this year. And so, you know, we've been successful all the years that we've had the program here from the start of the high school, and we have to come up with about $100,000 a year for our program. It takes about, like, $12,000, say, for us to take our team up to North Pole, who will be playing this year. And we also have to fund the teams that come down and travel from up north to visit us as part of the ASA stipulations when we join the league.
And ASA is the Alaska Association of School Activities. Yeah, I don't think the public realizes that as hosts, we do pay our up north peers to come down, and there isn't a lot of football competition quite yet in Southeast Alaska. I know that I've been on a couple whale watches recently, and I almost didn't go because I thought, oh, I live in Juneau, I've seen whales. And I have to say, both times, it was mind-blowing. So if folks are thinking, oh, I'm familiar with Southeast Alaska, I've seen a whale tail in the distance at least once or twice, I encourage them to think about this. I saw the bubble feeding some time ago last year, and it was you know, something to remember. How many young men will be typically involved in the team each year?
Well, right now, I think we've suited up 39 players, so typically around 40 or so student athletes are in the football program. We also help the cheerleaders, so we have a cheer squad. So they have a JV and a varsity cheer squad as well. Mm-hmm. So there's another two, three dozen young ladies that are involved. And our focus is really on, you know, building the student-athlete, academics first, sportsmanship, cooperation, you know, good work ethic, responsibility, that type of thing, and helping them transition into an adulthood with a positive attitude.
Where can people get more information about this Friday's Whale Watch?
Well, you can look around town on the poster board. You can call me at 988-7643. You can look at our website, which is Thunder Mountain Falcon Football, all together, one word.
And is mountain spelled out?
Yes, it is.
Thunder Mountain Falcon Football.
Yes.
.com.
And tickets are going for the low, low price of $75 for adults. Children 6 and under are just $50. And if you have a baby 12 months or under, they can come for free with a paying adult.
Okay, food and beverages on board available?
The crew at Allen Marine provides the beverages. They have a pay-as-you-go bar, and we will be providing some light food. We'll have lumpia and a fruit platter, a veggie platter, and other things. This year, our food is catered by the Johnson Youth Center Culinary Arts kids, and they do a tremendous job. So that's another way we help boost the community. These kids, you know, are learning work skills and how to be employable in the community, and it's a great program.
That's great, and I know there's a new coach, Jeep Rice, very experienced gentleman from our community. He'll be joining Roger Cox, Lance Northcutt. Any other coaches on board this year?
Yes, indeed. We have Ray Bradley, Todd Luck, and so Coach Rice, Cox, Bradley, Northcutt, and Luck are returning coaches. We have attracted Tom Ramage down from North Pole. He was the JV head coach there, and he will be joining us.
North Pole's been a tough team.
Oh, yes, and they're in our league this year. So is JD. So we're all in one conference now, middle school, or mid-sized school.
Mid-sized schools, right.
Southeast Conference. We also have Randy Quinto, who will be our head JV coach. He's a teacher out at DZ. And Russ Gilchrist is helping manage our equipment and general things like that with the team. So we have quite a staff now, and we're really raring to go.
And most of those people simply work as volunteers.
That's right. There's only one or two paid positions, and they aren't paid much.
No, they're not. Well, Jenny, thanks for the work you do to support youth. And we're talking about the Peregrine Boosters Club, which supports Thunder Mountain Football. sponsoring a whale watch this Friday night, 5 to 8:30. Show up at the Stater Harbor Dock to load. You'll be back by 8:30. You can look at the website, and this is all one word, ThundermountainFalconFootball.com, or for more information, 988-7643. Thanks, Jenny.
You bet. Thank you.
And here's the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, July 31st, 2013. It's the birthday of poet and novelist Kim Adonisio, born in Washington, D.C. in 1954. Her dad was a sports writer for the Washington Post, and her mom was the tennis champion Pauline Betts. Kim Adonisio, the author of Tell Me, What Is This Thing Called Love, and Lucifer at the Starlight. On this day in 1944, the writer Antoine de Saint-Exupéry disappeared while flying reconnaissance for the Allies. He's remembered as the author of the children's classic The Little Prince, but all of his other books, including Night Flight, were about his life as a pilot. After the Nazi invasion of France, he heard about a company of men using Lockheed P-38s to photograph enemy installations, and he tried to enlist. The age limit for the company was 35, and pilots had to be in top physical condition. Saint-Exupéry was 43 and in constant pain from an old injury, but he pestered, and finally they admitted him. On the morning of his final mission, he took off at 8:45, and was supposed to return with an hour's worth of fuel left at 1:30. He didn't return, and by 2:30, the men on the ground knew he was gone. His plane was never found. It's the birthday of children's fantasy writer J.K. Rowling, born in Yate, England in 1965. She tried writing a couple of novels but never finished them. But one day on a cross-country train trip, the idea of Harry Potter just appeared in her mind. She didn't have a pen to write things down, so she said, "Rather than try to write it, I had to think it, and I think that was a very good thing. I was besieged by a mass of detail, and if it didn't survive that journey, it probably wasn't worth remembering." As soon as she got home, she started writing what she did remember. It took Rowling a while to find a publisher for her novel, but finally it was published, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. It started with a print run of 1,000 copies. The last book in the series, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, had a first print run of 12 million copies in the United States, the largest first printing of any book in history. Altogether, the series has sold more than 400 million copies. J.K. Rowling, who said, "I would like to think that readers enjoy my stories because they are simply good stories." And here's a poem by George Bilger, Taking Out the Trash. I remember as a child watching my father take out the trash at the frozen crack of dawn, cursing as he dragged the stinking cans to the curb and thinking, "That's not something I'm ever going to do." In other ways, I was a model son, standing at the mirror as he shaved, dabbing the warm cream on my cheek, dreaming of a razor and whiskers of my very own. Watching him light up as he read the Sunday paper, one eye squinted against smoke and bad news, had me reading the funnies before I could even read, my eye squinted against nothing. And the deft, one-handed way he straightened his fedora's brim, while at the same time adjusting the coordinates of rake and tilt, makes me regret that the hat, like my father, has vanished, along with the strop and razor and lathery bowl of curds. Even smoking and the Sunday paper are on their way out. These are the losses I'm mourning this morning as I drag the stinking trash cans to the curb. Taking Out the Trash, a poem by George Bilger, from his collection The White Museum, published by Autumn House Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. This is Billy Collins, hoping you will join us next time here on the Writer's Almanac.
We're in the middle of a Juno afternoon. I'm Laurie Scandling, and speaking of back subscriptions, don't forget, if you miss a Juno afternoon or want to listen again, you can catch it and other local, statewide, national, and international news at ktoo.org. Welcome to Catherine Kell. She's the studio programming assistant at the Canvas Art Studio downtown. She has news for us about what's coming up in August. But first, tell us a little bit about what is the Canvas? What is its mission?
Well, the main mission of the Canvas is to create a space for inclusion through art. We are a part of Reach, Inc., which serves members of the Juno community who experience developmental disabilities. And the Canvas grew out of that mission, basically to create an art space where people could come together. We have our day hub classes during the day for our Reach artists. We also have community classes in the evening and a gallery space, which is shared by local artists as well as Reach artists.
What's your role there, Catherine? Talk a little bit about what your job is as the studio programming assistant. Do you plan the classes?
I don't actually plan the classes. That would be the job of our artistic coordinator, Chris Taylor. I do more of the marketing materials. If you receive the monthly e-blasts, that would be me. I also keep up the website, the Facebook, basically any printed materials you see from the Canvas. I also run the front desk, so if you call us, I'll be the voice over the phone.
And are you an artist yourself?
I am. I play trombone, have for over, I believe, 12 years now. Locally, I play in the Juno Symphony, and I also play with the Thunder Mountain Big Band.
Great. Well, tell us what's happening then at the Canvas in August.
Well, we've got some great events coming up this month at the Canvas. First off, we have our exhibit this month, which features brand new works by local artist Alan Monroe. The name of the exhibit is Creating Ideas, and it features a mixed media approach to painting, spanning from the abstract to the realistic. The focus of his show is nature, which Alan describes as, quote, my revered subject along with all things entrusted to her. We will be opening our exhibit this Friday, August 2nd, during the First Friday Gallery Walk. We'll be open 4:30 to 7. People can come by. There'll be a small reception, free and open to the public, as well as a chance to meet the artist in person. Also this month, the Canvas will be celebrating the beautiful, beautiful summer that we've been experiencing with the Canvas Summer Send-Off Carnival. The carnival will take place August 10th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., and will feature a wide range of family-friendly activities. We're going to have a watermelon eating contest and an opportunity for people to try their hand at the pottery wheel. So if you've been curious, you know, come by, check it out. We will also have live music by local artist Irene Muller. And once again, that's August 10th at the Canvas from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. On the class front, we got a couple really exciting kids' classes coming up. For example, August 5th, we have a youth beginning wheel class for ages 9 and up. The class will be taught by Brandon Howard and is a week-long class which focuses on the basic techniques for wedging, centering, and throwing bowls and cups. It's a great class for newcomers as well as those wishing to continue fine-tuning their skills. So those with experience are welcome as well. It's a morning class, 9 a.m. to noon, and costs $175. This price includes all materials.
And that's for a week every morning?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. 9 to noon.
Yep. Also taught by Brandon, we have our a hand-building class, August 12th through the 16th. It's also a morning class, 9 a.m. to noon, and it's for youth ages 9 and up. This class will explore various hand-building techniques, including the use of slabs, coils, and sculpting methods. Whether a student's interest is functional work or sculptural, they'll learn the techniques to create whatever it is that they imagine. Once again, that class is August 12th through the 16th, 9 a.m. to noon, and also costs $175, materials included. If you're interested in learning more about Tlingit crests with some hands-on experience, we have Ricky Tagaban's Form Line Stitching class. That's a week-long class starting next week, August 5th, and is for youth ages 8 and up. In this course, students will create a canvas and felt bag decorated with traditional form line designs. Not only will students learn how to do a basic backstitching technique and how to sew buttons, but they'll also become familiar with the Thlinkit crests. The class is $95, and all materials, once again, are included in that price. This is an afternoon class, so it would go Monday through Friday, August 5th, 1 to 4 p.m.
Ricky Tagavant's a very talented person, I know that.
Yes, he is. We've already had a couple classes of his, Thlinkit basket weaving and form line design. They've been extremely popular. Another new teacher that we have at the Canvas this summer is Ben Huff, who will be teaching digital photography. In this class, students will take daily excursions into the Juneau community to take photographs, focusing on photography fundamentals, such as camera settings, composition, and quality of light. This is a week-long class starting August 12th through the 16th, 9 a.m. to noon. It's for youth ages 11 and up and costs $95. Once again, materials are included, but participants are requested to bring their own digital cameras for that class.
Okay.
That's what we have going
on the
Canvas.
That's a lot of information, Catherine. You guys are busy down there programming. So if folks missed some details, what's your website and phone number, Catherine?
Well, our website is www.canvasarts.org, and they can also give us a call at 586-1750. That's 586-1750. Or if you want, you come by and visit us the next time you're downtown. We're at 223 Seward Street, right across the street from Olivia's and the Whale Project, and just a block up from the Rookery.
So if a family can't afford the tuition, are there options for scholarships?
We do have limited funding for youth scholarships. If they're interested in applying for that, they would need to contact our director, Kelly Manning. The phone number is the same. Once again, 586-1750.
So call Kelly.
Yes, ma'am.
So if a family is concerned that it might not be able to participate, it's worth a phone call on their part then.
Yes, because we do have some limited funding options.
Great. Well, Catherine, thank you for joining us. We've been talking with Catherine Kell of the Canvas about the August programs. And, of course, August is tomorrow.
Yeah.
So lots of classes for kids beginning on Monday. Most of them run a full week, 5 days in a row. Typically,
yep,
3 hours in the morning or 3 hours in the afternoon, and the price runs between $95 and $175. But if money is a challenge, don't hesitate to call Kelly at the Canvas at 586-1750. That's 1750. Or look at canvasarts.org to get more details on a class in which you or a young one you know might be interested. And they have a featured show during this Friday's gallery walk from 4:30 to 7, featuring local artist Alan Monroe.
Yes, we do.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine.
Thank you for having me.
You bet.
It all started with a duck, a little metal duck. You tap it on its head, it goes back and forth. It swing to the left, swing to the right. Little Alexander called and said, I think I might like making the art that moves. Called and moved to Paris, creative as can be. Made a little circus and yes sirree. I like simple shapes, see what I can make. Sculpted thin bits of metal hanging, they look great just swinging.
It's a Juno afternoon, and we are talking with John Marston. He's a digital photographer, and he has a show that will be on display during this week's gallery walk. And his space is down at Mariella, which is on South Franklin. John, how did you get into this type of art?
Well, I've been a shutterbug my whole life, ever since I was a kid. I take way too many pictures, I think. But last couple weeks, we've had such great weather here. I got out to Salmon Creek to just sit by the water and watch the fish come by, stick my feet in the cold stream, you know, and just started shooting like crazy, these reflections on top of the water. And I thought they came out so much like oil paintings that I would just do a show using these instead of the tons of other stock stuff that I have, boats and pretty scenery. And, you know, we live in a postcard here in Juneau, right? And I got a ton of that. But this is not about any humpback whales or polar bears or anything like that. This is just like abstract photography.
It's lovely. I'm looking at a postcard right now, and as John said, it does look like an oil painting, an abstract oil painting with the swaths of color churning across the page.
You know the cloud game when you look up in the sky? And you
yes,
look at
what does it look like?
Yeah, it looks like something different to different people.
You've captured the colors very beautifully. So talk a little bit about the purpose of the show this coming Friday. Before we went on the air, you were saying, I'd love to encourage everybody to pick up a camera.
Definitely. I mean, I think beauty is all around us. And, you know, these are just shots of, you know, your local stream. It could be anywhere in the world. This happens to be a salmon stream, a wild Alaskan salmon stream. And I love that aspect of it because I love salmon. But I think one of the purposes is to expand the art walk down around that corner, down there by the library. A couple good gallery opportunities. And I know it's hard to get people past the Red Dog unless the Alaskans offering beer down at the depot. So this is what we gotta do. You know, we gotta promote the show. I want people to come down a little farther this week and walk a little farther. It's good for you.
Well, I see on your postcard you kindly provided the address for the Mariella at 210 Admiral Way, and you say on the card, it's across from the library, between the Red Dog and Alpaca International. Couldn't be more clear. How many pieces will you have for the show, John?
Well, it seems like I've got about 50 hanging in the air right now by fishing line. My friend Nate's idea. Really cool. I mean, they're all in 3D space. You kind of walk through, and there's like boom, 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 boom pictures that kind of bring you around the curve to the first cubbyhole where we start putting in wall installations, where we do different types of just wall decor, you know, using these kinds of images.
Are the images for sale? Many times at the gallery walk, you'll see original art that is for sale. What about your work?
Yes, for sure. We want to sell some images. Got way too many. I'm going to have a lot left over after this is done. Let's put it that way.
So you said you've been a shutterbug since you were a kid. What pulled you into it? And talk a little bit about the odyssey from truly having a shutter on your camera with the old, well, not even, I mean, I suppose the single lens reflex camera is still being used by some, but the change from a more typical way of taking pictures, say, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and digital photography.
Well, I like that word odyssey. I mean, I wanted to say something about my mom. She used to develop all my rolls of film from Alaska. That was how we kept in touch. If I sent my rolls home, she'd have something to, you know, send back to me, and we had these letters going back and forth. But I still use an SLR. It's a digital SLR.
Mm-hmm.
And the way these images are shot is, you know, using it in manual mode. Shut the aperture way down, low, light, and I leave it open longer, and then I zoom way in for the aspect ratio, and it just kind of makes everything kind of blur. And then I just put it on auto, shoot, and I got a million pictures to process at the end of the day. I take about 1,000 pictures a day. It's not a problem.
And where else do you choose besides, well, with digital, cameras, it's not a problem. You can edit as you go in terms of what you wish to keep and what you decide isn't worth memorializing, as it were. So,
but the coolest thing about digital for me is like that picture within the picture, like being able to zoom in and crop and stuff with the larger formats that we have now, and the instant gratification of being able to see it at the end of the day, of course. But this show is all about digital photography as an art form. I think these are like fine art images. The ones I have on canvas look like paintings. They're amazing.
And have you printed many of these on canvas
show? Yeah, there's some at the show. And you can basically pick out any of these and we'll have them printed on canvas for you. But that's the way to do these. They really look special that way.
You mentioned having the relationship with your mom through photography, sending her the rolls to be developed from Alaska. Where else have you taken pictures in Alaska? What else has captured your imagination in this state?
A lot of fishing. Came up here with commercial fishing, and so there's a lot of boats, a lot of marine seascapes and things like that in my portfolio. But you won't find any of that in this show. No eagles, no humpback whales, none of the standard stuff. I mean, really, this show could run anywhere. It could. I think I could take it down to Seattle and then L.A. or wherever, because it's about water. And you know, we all need to drink more of that, and it's a global, you know, fresh drinking water is a global crisis now, too.
And water certainly defines who we are as Alaskans here in this part of Alaska, being right on the ocean, for
sure. So does salmon. I mean, without salmon, I don't think any of us would be here.
Well, certainly our original peoples were sustained by salmon. What would you say to somebody who's interested in getting into photography more than just taking a snap on their iPhone and emailing it to somebody? What would you recommend?
Well, I just heard about that class at the
Canvas.
The Canvas, and for children 11 or over, that would be me, right? So, what is it, like a week long
yeah,
class?
Yeah, it's every day for 3 hours.
I should take that class. Some people probably tell me I'll need to take that class, but don't judge me by this show alone.
I think there's still time to sign up.
Okay.
So is your advice take a class? Because it sounds like maybe you haven't.
No, I'm pretty self-taught. But that's, I think, outside the box that way. Kind of self-taught that way.
Okay.
But I'd take a class just to meet other people that like doing that. I like going on photo safaris with my friends, and we're all shooting cameras out the windows, you know. We're driving around town.
I know that that's an offered excursion here in Juneau for visitors. As I've done some hiking, I've seen groups of people with a well-known local photographer as he's describing how to shoot nature. And so the photo excursions, I think, are gaining popularity for the public who is traveling to various places in the world.
My favorite stuff is real low light, like in the evenings or where the room is very dark and you have to leave your shutter open for a long time. And you get kind of blurry, really colorful images. I'm not so into focus anymore. I want like color.
So that's a part of your odyssey, as we talked about before, is moving into less focused, darker. I hesitate to say blurry.
You know how Van Gogh started out drawing realistically,
mm-hmm.
and then he kind of got into this, you know, kind of more impressionistic style. And then he cut off his ear. Well, I'm right in between the impressionistic and the ear cutting, somewhere in between there, I think.
I'm not sure the ear cutting was directly linked to the impressionism.
I think he was eating his paint, and he went crazy or something like that.
He had some relational problems.
Well, he never sold anything in his lifetime.
I know.
You know that?
And his brother had a gallery.
And I want to beat him. I want to sell something.
So that's your goal?
Yeah.
Is to have...
I want to beat Van Gogh.
You might have a banner up then on Friday. How many will you have posted? You said you've taken 1,000 pictures a day, and you've described a little bit about how some of them, at least, will be hanging from fish line, and then you do have some wall installations.
About 100.
100 pieces.
Yeah, hanging in the air, and if they don't blow down, look at this wind. What a great day in Juneau, huh?
It is.
But it's kind of windy.
It is lovely.
And I like the way it makes the water images shimmer a little bit, too.
Mm-hmm.
They're in motion as well. And it's pictures of water in motion, and they're in motion, actually, floating in the air.
And is this an idea you've ever pursued before? Did it just come from sitting alongside the stream that you mentioned a bit earlier?
Yeah, once I saw them, I said, oh, wow, these are cool, you know, and these are different. And we just did it 2 weeks ago, and we, you know, in a wild hair and found the space and pulled it together. Because we had the time. And
have you ever had a show before?
Never had a show before. It was my first show. First Friday.
So this is a debut then of sorts.
This is a debut. Watch out, world.
So how do you make a living? Are you a professional photographer, meaning
sometimes
you do studio work, or talk a little bit about that? It's hard for artists to put
in a
professional
last,
life together.
You know
together.
That 2010 panorama you got out here? Mm-hmm. I love the photography you have in the walls, by the way, around here. But I shot that celebration. And the next day, Huna Totem called up and they wanted somebody to fly out to Glacier Bay. That was like, 2 years ago. And I got that was like my first professional gig. And in Alaska, anyway. That was fun. But usually I design boat names, actually. I'm an illustrator and web guy from way back, and I have a site called Marine Graphics. And I think these should be available at Marine Graphics because they're about water and they're very graphical images.
Could people find this work online then? Do you have them posted yet?
Right now they're on my ImageKind account, but I'm gonna link it in through Marine Graphics.
Okay, so is that marinegraphics.com?
Yeah.
And who do you find that you're drawn to as an artist photographer? I'm thinking of maybe Andy Goldsberry. You've probably seen his work.
Oh, God,
but he designs the outdoors that he takes, and you take the outdoors.
This
in
week
the
I feel like
state.
Andy Warhol in the factory, you know, because we're just cranking out thousands of images. And they're all, it's, you know, he wanted to make an image of everything, you know, anything in print, he would just slap it out. But I like his stuff. I'm in advertising and art at the same time, so I really appreciate that kind of thing.
So graphics that pop.
Yeah.
As they say. Tell me a little bit about the process of making these pictures. This is a fairly high quality postcard just right here. How do you do the canvas prints, and do you do them locally or do you have them ordered?
Yeah, Art Such. He's the man. He helped me out with all these in time. I mean, we had 2 weeks basically to pull this whole thing together, and we're still hanging them. So, yeah, Art got it out real quick, and the canvases look great.
So. Now, when you say we... You and
we,
Art?
I had to, Art help. Definitely, you know, I'm not alone in this. I mean, I have my friend Nate's helping me hang everything, and Mariella's donating the space, and Art's printing the stuff, and it's really a community effort. Really, all I did was hold the shutter button down for a couple of clicks, and
it's exciting that you pulled it together in 2 weeks. I just saw something in the New
I'm
York Times.
I'm trying to get people to come down and look at it.
Yeah, this weekend about a team that put together a design and developed it within a matter of days. And so you've got a very, no pun intended, fluid process going on, John. Well, we're talking with John Marston about his photo show, which will open this Friday at Mariella. That's down on Admiral Way across from the library. And his focus is water in motion. It's described as John freezing the chaotic nature of water and the essence of time in a uniquely colorful still frame image. Thanks for joining us, John.
Thank you.
Weather, well, sorry to say, it's going to be increasingly cloudy beginning tomorrow and through the weekend with temps still in the 60s. This is KTOO FM in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3, K276 AF 103.1 as well. And in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek at K269AO at 101.7. Gus Davis is at K201AM 88.1. K22BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, we are on K210AS 89.9. You can also get us on GCI Cable Digital Channel 871, KRNN at 872, KXLL at 873. And, of course, we're on the web at www.ktoo.org. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.
I believe, based on what I have seen, that we would place this nation in jeopardy if we eliminated these two programs.
Lawmakers weigh whether to change the government surveillance program.
For Wednesday, July 31st, this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm...